saving money on your interior stains and finishes now at Menards. Provide exceptional color to your staining project with Minwax Color Series. It applies evenly and dries fast with just one coat. Get a quart of Minwax Color Series wood stain in over 240 colors. On sale now through April 12th. Visit our paint desk and let our helpful team get you everything you need for your stain project today.
Save big money at the
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HRP guest line, Howard Balzer, our favorite Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Howard, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees on this Tuesday afternoon. The Colts have done kind of the unthinkable, and it relates to the city of Houston because, of course, the Texans almost did the same unthinkable. Almost hired a head coach who had zero coaching experience outside of the high school level. Jim Irsay going with Jeff Saturday as his interim head coach. How shocked were you with this, and can it work in the NFL?
Well, we have to separate it from what the Texans were considering, because that was as the full-time head coach coming in, formulate everything and all that. Jeff Saturday, I think it is crazy, don't get me wrong, but what I'm sure the plan here is getting an outside look in the locker room at the players, being there on a daily basis, on an interim basis for the rest of the season. And that's essentially what this is. And I think sometimes we don't look at this very closely in a lot of situations, but when coaches get fired during the season and the team hires someone on the staff, well, that guy has another job. And so now how does he now balance that job that he had with also now being the head coach and running the meetings and running the schedule and talking to the media and all those things? So I think when you strip away all that stuff, you look at it and say, well, maybe it's not as crazy as it looks. And the team isn't real good right now. They have offensive line issues. Jonathan Taylor is a shell of himself, of what he was last year compared to this season. They're playing with a very young quarterback who's not ready for the NFL. So it's not like all of a sudden Jeff Saturday or whoever was going to come in and this was going to suddenly turn around. That's unrealistic. I think it's just as crazy to fire Frank Reich. I mean, but that's Jim Irsay. I mean, just what, like he decided at the end of last season, after Carson Wentz actually played decent football for much of the year and had the Colts on the precipice of a playoff spot, didn't do well as the whole team didn't in the final two games, and all of a sudden, well, let's change the quarterback again. We haven't had enough quarterback changes since Andrew Luck retired, right? So they just do weird things. But I think for probably what they are hoping to gain from this, I think they're hoping to learn a little bit more about the players with a guy on the inside because the general manager isn't in the locker room. The general manager, he can evaluate on the field and all that and watch practice, but he doesn't view a lot of these other things. And so Jeff Saturday now becomes the eyes and ears for not only Jim Irsay, but Chris Ballard also.
Well, and I was going to say, Howard, as it relates to the Colts and Ballard, and also the Broncos to some degree, right, that they did a hell of a job in most people's eyes in terms of constructing a roster that was Super Bowl worthy or possibilities because of all the different guys they were able to put together. But the quarterback is, as we all know, the most important, the toughest position to get right. And now after two swings and misses, especially the first guy that Reich was vouching for as a guy he used to work with in Wentz, you look at it and say, it really does come down to the quarterback a lot. And these teams are finding out, even if you have seemingly everything else, if you don't have that and have the right guy, it can be doomsday for you, and we're seeing that with both franchises.
No question. And obviously, you have to have the quarterback, but you also have, and what slays me all the time is when people generally, I hear stuff on different stations, national or whatever, and they're analyzing this particular team, and they're talking about, oh, the play calling isn't very good, and the quarterback's regressing. I've heard that Matthew Stafford is regressing, and all those things with the Rams, but if you don't have the offensive line and continuity in that line is the most important thing. You don't have to have five number one picks. You don't have to have five Pro Bowl caliber players on your line. You just basically have to have at least as close to possible five guys that are out there every week having continuity, having chemistry, and being able to run block, open up holes, protect the quarterback. If you don't have that, doesn't matter who the quarterback is. And you look at the Rams are a classic example. This is a team that won the Super Bowl, right? And Sean McVay is the boy wonder, right? The genius of play calling. What are the Rams doing this year? Awfully. They're terrible on offense. And I hear, Matthew Stafford's regressing. No, look at the line. They've had seven different starting offensive line combinations in eight games, and including five different right guards have started for them in their eight games. So that's where it begins. And all that other, you can have a great quarterback and other, contributing players, whether receivers, tight end, running back, whatever it is. But if the offensive line can't do its job consistently, especially in those critical situations that determine games, third down, red zone, first down productivity, the Rams last week had eight three and outs in that game against the Buccaneers Sunday. And most of them were because they gained nothing on first down. And so they're constantly in second and third and long situations. That's the key, is that line. And I don't know, maybe owners can't see that. People don't talk about it because it's not sexy to talk about the offensive line. Let's talk about the quarterback and all that. But to me, that's where it all begins.
I think that the fantasy football is kind of ruin the way that NFL games should be viewed. And it's not to say it's not fun, but we look at the skill position guys, we look at quarterback numbers, running backs doing their thing. And quite honestly, it hasn't changed a whole lot of what wins in the NFL. You have a really good offensive line, you have a really good defensive line, you're probably going to have a really good football team despite everything else.
No, you're 100% right. Now, you still have to have a competent quarterback in those things, but you have a better chance of winning with a guy who's just good than great if you don't have that line. I mean, Jalen Hurts is being celebrated as a MVP candidate, and I'm not saying that's not deservedly so, but if you look at the Eagles' offensive line, I looked at this last week because I was doing something on the Cardinals because they've been decimated. They were playing against the Seahawks on Sunday with three backups in the interior of the line. They started the game with two, and then they lost their right guard on the first series, on the first possession of the game. So I looked at some teams that are doing well. The Eagles have had one player miss one game on the offensive line this season. The Vikings, they've won six consecutive games by one score. They haven't had an offensive lineman miss a start this season from all five of those guys. So when you have that, you can win. Close games separate most teams in the NFL. And, the Vikings, like I said, they're 6-0 in one-score games, and a big part of it. And they've got good offensive players. They don't have a great quarterback in Kirk Cousins, but they have Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson and these guys. But they have an offensive line that's doing its job. And that's always been the way it is. It will never change. And yet it gets ignored most of the time when problems with teams are discussed. Everything except the offensive line. Or one of my favorite lines, as I've heard some people say, is, and I've gotten this on Twitter, I understand there's problems on the offensive line, but.
Well,
no, there is no but. There is no but. Oh, the coach has to be creative. Coach has to adjust. Well, how do you adjust? How do you have any confidence in your game plan and call plays when you know pretty much the offensive line is probably going to struggle against just a good defense and a good defensive front just because of you're playing backups who haven't played together? Cardinals, for example, are playing a center, Billy Price, now for three games, who wasn't even with a team in training camp after becoming an unrestricted free agent in March. Wasn't with a team in training camp, signed by the Raiders to the practice squad in September, and the Cardinals signed him on October 4th, and 16 days later, he was starting at center on the Thursday night game against the Saints. And so when you're forced to do those things, it's very, very difficult to have consistent success and appear that your offense is in rhythm.
Howard, what's better, the favorites that are clear-cut and just dominant all year, or the parity we've seen with all the teams in Vegas that were predicted to be Super Bowl contenders that look like they're anything but? Rams, Buccaneers, Packers, the Bills now, Josh Allen's elbow. I mean, it just seems like everybody that wants parity is getting it. I'm just not sure it's right for football.
Well, it's always been there to an extent, and because you always it's kind of like the famous bell curve in, you know, in school when they say teachers graded on a scale, there's some at the bottom, there's some at the top, and there's this whole big glob in the middle. And that's what it is. That's what it is right now. And there's a lot of teams that are 5-4, 4-4, 4-5 that are just kind of middling around. And some of those teams hope they can get on a run and possibly get in the playoffs. But the competition is good because you usually have close games. And I think it's pretty good for the league. You do have teams at the top, no question about it. Will they hang on? We'll see about that. But right now in the AFC, there's 9 teams with winning records. There's only 5 in the NFC, and 3 of them are in the NFC East. So it's going to be strange to see who's really battling it out for, like, the NFC South or for the one wild card if all 3 teams in the NFC East keep this up. And so it'll make for a crazy November and December and into January in the league, but that's what normally happens. I think that's usually the way it goes when you have a whole bunch of teams just around that middle. Some will fall off and not do well. Some might catch fire and possibly move. Like the Eagles. Eagles are a perfect example. They weren't very good at this time last year, nor were the 49ers. And they both caught fire at the end of the season and made the playoffs. And now the 49ers are at 500, but they're looking pretty good for the second half, and the Eagles obviously are doing what they're doing.
Howard, we always appreciate the time. Enjoy this week in the NFL.
Look forward to it, guys. Always enjoy being
Thanks,
with
Howard.
You. Take care.
Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. So people want to weigh in on the Jeff Saturday conversation. We can stay there. Killer Bees, 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So people want to talk about Jeff Saturday, the Colts hire. And would you be okay, more okay, with McCown if Saturday has success? I overall agree with Balzer, though. This team's not set up for success, which irritates me about the Saturday thing, because I want a first-year head coach that has never coached before to have success in the NFL. I don't think the Colts' position is one to succeed, because I don't think the roster's that good, and part of the reason they've struggled this year, and the injury to Jonathan Taylor. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go there for Andre. Andre, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Andre?
Hey, I just wanted to go on and say that I believe Jeff Saturday can be a great coach. I believe he has the potential. I mean, arguably, he was the best center in the early 2000s. You know, he was providing great coverage for Peyton Manning, and it seemed that him and Peyton Manning argued on what the line and the offensive line should be doing. I think the team itself, however, may have some issues. I feel like the roster is a little iffy, and here's the hot thing. I don't know. I feel like Carson Wentz has always been overrated. I feel like there's, you know, secondary quarterbacks in other teams that could have, you know, started over him in Indianapolis. You know, one being Gardner Minshew. I was a Minshew fan, and I just think that, you know, first, they have to resurrect the roster a little bit, but I think Jeff Saturday, he just has to get in the flux of things and really work out with a lot of the other coaches.
Appreciate the call, Andre. You listed a lot of quarterbacks who are not Indianapolis Colts. Gardner Minshew's never been a Colt, but I see your point. Like, they could have went the Gardner Minshew route instead of the Matt Ryan route. Maybe they could have went Minshew last year instead of Carson Wentz, although Carson Wentz had a pretty good
Jimmy
statistical
G.
season.
You could have tried to make a trade
maybe,
for Jimmy
and maybe
G.
Maybe they did.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, but in terms of, like, the Saturday, like, the quality of being a head coach, I'm of the opinion, and look, I say this all the time, I'm a pretty keep it simple, stupid kind of guy. I think that smart football minds figure out how to be smart football decision makers. I think Bill Belichick has always been a smart football fine. mind. I think if Belichick would have been hired without any coaching experience ever, that Bill Belichick would have been fine. I think Nick Saban is a great football mind. I think if Nick Saban got hired with zero coaching experience ever, Nick Saban would have been fine. I don't know if Jeff Saturday is that guy, but I'm not going to blame an owner in Jim Irsay, and I understand that Irsay is warranted to a lot of like controversial opinions on Jim Irsay because of Jim Irsay's past. But if Jeff Saturday has the best football mind on planet Earth, why shouldn't he be hired as a head coach in the NFL?
Well, I mean, it's one thing if you're taking over a team ready to win right now and expectations are you're going to make the playoffs and go deep and giving the guy the reins and really setting yourself up for the potential of a lot bigger failure. If your team basically is already in the tank, you've already benched the big quarterback that you went out and got for the second straight year, there's really not a whole much more to lose except for games. So why not give him a chance and see? Because truly, to your point, it's a leader of men as well as what you're saying. You know the game. You've been a leader at your position, as the caller said. You've been a leader in a locker room. Can you do it from the position of strength of being a coach, and in this case, a head coach? I look to a Mike Vrabel. Vrabel was a leader on the field. Vrabel was a leader, but the one thing that he has, that to your point, yeah, on the flip side, was he has the coaching experience. He did his time. I look at a friend of mine in Mario Elie, who always, everybody said, had that leader of men quality, had that ability to bring guys together. But you know what? He put in his time, and the frustration was he basically was on, unfortunately, was on a team year that went deep into the playoffs, never got the shot when he was a leading candidate, and then never got another chance again. So you have to kind of be a golden child in a way, or it's who you know, to get the opportunities too. Because I do believe to some degree what you're saying in the fact that some guys, as leader of men, that possess the ability to not only be intelligent in the game, but smart in the way you handle people, are basically groomed or tailor-made to be head coaches. But how you get that opportunity, and if you get that opportunity, sure, a lot of times relates to who you know and how you get there.
I agree with a lot of that. And Mike Vrabel, I think, is a great example here. If Mike Vrabel was never an assistant coach anywhere and just went straight as a head coach after Belichick and the Patriots, do you think he would have success? I think he would.
No, but I'm saying it. But it's also about how you get there, right?
But that's more about the hiring process.
It is, and for sure, because a lot of people, too, have asked about the whole Rooney Rule, and they said as long as he's the interim coach, it doesn't factor in, but if they do want to make him the head coach, they cannot make him the head coach until they interview other candidates. As it relates, getting back to our conversation, though, about how you get that job, I mean, you've got to have just a solid relationship with owners, not just the owner that you played the majority. You know, in this case, it's almost beneficial to have played with multiple teams and showed different owners that you can be a leader, that you can do these kind of things in a locker room and with position groups and players so that they remember you and can consider you. Because it takes an open-minded, kind of more modern-day thinking owner willing to take a flyer, or someone that's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, whether you're experienced or not, yeah, because like you can make that point for Irsay, right? You can, mm-hmm, even look at Cal. But you could say, you know, to the Jerry Joneses of the world, would they ever do that? I don't think so.
I don't know. Maybe Jones, because Jones can be kind of nuts. 0174, Saturday was 4-time All-Pro. I think it was 2-time All-Pro, but regardless, doesn't matter. 6 Pro Bowls, Super Bowl champ, Colts Ring of Honor. The main thing is he will have the instant respect of the players. Other coaches will handle most of the technical aspects of running the team. Saturday's success or failure will be if he can motivate the players. I would go a step further and say it depends on the skill set, the talent of that roster as well, which isn't great. That's the one thing that annoys me about the Saturday thing. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Let's get Lamont in here. Lamont, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Lamont?
Hey, man. I believe that this is going to be a beautiful failure. I think if we look at this, dig a little deeper, it's nothing. Everything that you guys have laid out pretty much tells me that this is going to be a beautiful tank job for the Colts, and they're going to probably get their quarterback out of this. But what's happening right now is an issue of timing, just like the Texans. The Colts were supposed to fire Reich after the Jacksonville game last year, the same way the Texans were supposed to fire O'Brien after the Chiefs game. But what makes the Colts even more worse is that we had what was it, like 5 to 6 quality, some decent coaches out there? They could have had their pick of the litter. You can't tell me a coach wouldn't want to come to the – a coach wouldn't have wanted to come to the Colts. Mm-hmm. Come coach there with Jonathan Taylor and I guess they got Pittman. They're not, yep, Pittman. The day wide receiver or whatever.
Kid from USC, Pittman.
What I'm trying to get I think that they just made a mistake in the timing and fired their coach in season, just like the Texans did. But it looks worse on them, man, because now they we really don't know what the coaches are going to be this year, or whatever. But I had something else, man. The Texans suck, and they suck more than what we even thought. Because at the beginning of the year, we was all like going through the schedule, talking about, "Ooh, man, they gonna lose this game, because this team gonna be good, that team gonna be good." Most of the teams that they lost to suck, and so it lands to tell me that the Texans are even worse than what we thought they was. They lost to the Raiders, they lost to the Broncos,
yeah.
They lost to. It's a couple of other teams that they lost to that suck right now. They could even beat them. And that's all I have, fellas.
Appreciate the call, Lamont. Look, they're the only one-win team in the NFL. There is not a team in the NFL right now that has fewer wins than the Houston Texans.
Brendan.
The only one-win team in the entire league. A lot of people want to talk about the Jeff Saturday stuff. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jeff Saturday is the interim head coach of the Colts. A lot of people have thoughts on that. I saw Robert Griffin III, who was a colleague of Jeff Saturday once upon a time. He had, in what my mind was just an egregious take, he said that he likes Jeff Saturday. He's liked working with him, all of that stuff. Let me pull up the exact tweet so I don't get anything wrong here. Lots of tiptoeing around the Jeff Saturday hiring for the Colts. Jeff was a blast to work with at ESPN, but it doesn't change the fact that it's a head-scratching, slap-in-the-face to every coach on that staff type of decision. Stephen A. Smith will be coaching the Nets next. I think that's more of a slap in the face, that tweet, to Jeff Saturday. If you're comparing Stephen A. Smith to be a head coach of a sports team to Jeff Saturday being a head coach to a sports team, that's far more of a slap in the face to Jeff Saturday than it is anybody on that Colts coaching staff who's been terrible this year.
Like, you know, we've been talking about over and over, even with McCown, the over 10 years from each guy's perspective of being a player in the NFL. Stephen A. never set foot on an NBA floor in anything but dress shoes or in tennis shoes to do a stunt for a shooting contest with a James Harden. He doesn't have the player resume and those kind of credible assets to come to the table to be a head coach in the NBA the way that Jeff Saturday at least has been there, done that as a player, to understand what it takes from a day-to-day basis to be a guy in command, in charge, in management of a football team. So I'm with you on that. I think that comes for as much as like the backhanded compliment. I love working with you, and you're a great dude, but the fact that you're going to be the head coach of the Colts, I don't think you're going to be very good, and I think that's a slap in the face to people that actually would be very good.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. William, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Will?
Hey, let me make this simple for you guys. It's called the Al Davis syndrome, or the owner's ego disability, disease. It's just a matter of these owners have these egos. And I'm a Cowboys fan, so I've been living through this for the last 30 years with Jerry Jones.
You know it.
So, you know, it's, and we could say the Rooney Rule, but, you know, it's just like any job. If you bring up a guy that comes from nowhere with no experience, how can you expect them to perform without some form of support? So bringing Saturday in, no discredit to the guy was a great lineman.
Mm-hmm.
But bring him in as a lineman coach. Because most teams in the NFL, problem is the line. Just like Deshaun Watson, I understand all that rhetoric behind what he's done, but part of his problem, he didn't have a line.
Appreciate the
and,
call.
You know, you can look back at the Cowboys and see that their problem is the line. And yeah. And if the owners would just get out the way long enough to let the coaches or qualified to make some decisions, they'll see a successful season.
Appreciate the call, William. And I think you're on to something with the owner thing. I don't disagree with that at all. I think it's a good call. Irsay's a little loony, a little crazy. A little loony craziness was needed to hire Jeff Saturday as the interim head coach. You see it in Dallas with Jerry Jones. Somebody texted in, too, said that Jerry Jones would hire Tony Romo as his head coach like that. Maybe a Cowboy fan. The comparison, though, to an offensive line coach, you can make a case that Jeff Saturday is going to do less coaching as the head coach than he would as a position coach in the NFL.
That's true.
So, like, he can literally just be the, a leadership type of dude. He could just oversee the entire – because this is what it's going to be. He's not calling
plays.
But don't
cap on how many responsibilities does the head coach come into play, especially as you get into game day.
See, I just disagree with you on, like, game day decisions being that difficult. Like, I just – I don't agree with that.
Showed you how difficult it can be, right, and he was a long-time OC.
Sure. But, I mean, Nathaniel Hackett –
smirk
been,
at that. I'm just saying.
Why are you going to smirk at that? Because Nick Sirianni's been fine. Sean McVay's been fine. Mark McDaniel's been fine. So you can say one bad one. I can say a dozen good ones.
That's fine, and we can go back and forth. But I'm just saying it's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be in the fact that, you know, you have sometimes – And each guy's makeup, that's what I was talking about, too, the fact that you can be a leader of men and you can show certain qualities and characteristics that mean that you're going to probably understand it and grasp it quicker than others. But I think that it's not like it's just, you know, these guys can do this and they can do that, and it's a walk in the park. I think every situation is different, especially when the last guy that you had was the last guy calling plays for you, too. But I think that you're going to wait. We're going to find out real quick.
Well, he wasn't calling plays.
Reich was the last week because of they fired the OC.
That's what
I said, the last
week.
I'm just saying, though, you don't have a guy. Now you're trying to find a guy, and they found the assistant quarterback coach that's going to call the plays. But for the most part, there's a lot of the little small details that I think that even as a position coach or a guy that's been in the meeting rooms during the week and on the practice fields don't understand what you're responsible for until you get that responsibility. And even offensive coordinators sometimes, they're on the headsets with these guys, but they don't understand who else the coach is talking
sure.
to.
Would an offensive coordinator, though, be more prepared than a lineman who's been in the league for 14 years?
I would think right now in today's modern-day NFL, an offensive coordinator would be more prepared, yes.
See, I don't know if I can say that. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Eric, you're on the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Eric?
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
What's up, man?
Hey, so I feel like personally Jeff Saturday is going to be a good hire because, you know, one thing I really want to point out is, and you guys said this earlier, his IQ is through the charts. And, you know, for a center, for your IQ to be up there, you know, you have to know a lot of things going on with the offense and going on with the game in general. And then two, you know, one thing I really do want to point out is when Jeff Saturday played, he played for the Colts back in the early 2000s, and the Colts were a powerhouse during that time. You know, and I feel like the Colts right now are not playing that style of football. They're just playing, you know, dink and dunk. Hey, we're going to get somebody here. We're going to get somebody there type of football. And I feel like bringing that type of guy in and it helps set the tone and set the base of the type of football that they can play. And you also have a veteran, Matt Ryan, who is there to help you out. You have all the other coaches out there. I really feel like that it can be a really good hire. I mean, if you set the tone this year and you're going into the playoffs and somehow they make a playoff push, I really feel like that he can be the head coach going forward, especially if he's able to develop these guys and get those guys on board with everything that he's, you know, able to teach and get them to believe in.
Appreciate the call, Eric, and thank you for listening to the Killer Bees. Look, I'm advocating for Jeff Saturday, but I also hesitate to think that the Colts are going to have this magical run. It's like,
oh, man.
Why it kind of annoys me, because like, I want Jeff Saturday to work. I don't think this is an ideal situation to make it work. And Eric talked about what I think would be wholesale changes. Like, if you're all of a sudden trying to change the identity of the Indianapolis Colts at, you know, November 8th in game week, that's not realistic.
No, and I think the other thing, too, is it's like even when we go back to Pep Hamilton discussions and everything else, you can only do what your personnel allows you to, right? So trying to turn this thing around, as good as some of the other position groups are and some of the players they have on the roster, do they have enough, and especially because the quarterback is so important, do they have anybody that can help them to turn this thing around this year? And I would say the answer is probably no. But you know what? It remains to be seen. I'm pulling for Jeff Saturday. I believe in Jeff Saturday as one of the most intelligent players that have played the game. He played with Peyton Manning, too, so he got involved. They were best friends. They got involved in a lot of the offensive play calls and a lot of the discussions. He knows schemes. He knows the offense. He's seen it. He's been around it. And also from a locker room and from a guy that isn't afraid to call people out and put them on the spot to make them better players, I think he possesses all those things, and he is a leader. But I think it remains to be seen how that translates to when you truly have to be that guy doing all those things and how big of a difference it is. It's easier to do it when you've been as a player. It's easier to do it when you've been a leader in a locker room. But now you need to earn the respect of a team on the fly. That's different.
If it was Peyton Manning, how would you feel about it?
I mean, the same way. I think Peyton Manning, if he's calling the offensive plays, I have trust in him because of the fact that he knows how to call an offense. He understands how to read a defense. But again, he's dealing with a quarterback in Sam Ehlinger. He's not dealing with a guy that he can, you know, pop and play and say, this guy's capable of doing what I tell him to do and throwing the ball where I need him to throw it to make these plays successful.
I think if it was Manning, that most people would feel better about Manning, you know, never coaching before and being the head coach than Saturday. And I don't think that that's fair. Like, anybody is capable of doing it. Just because Peyton Manning's popular, played the quarterback position, and orchestrated an offense doesn't mean that he's any more suited to be a head coach in the center for Peyton Manning all of
those
years.
No, I see where you're going. And obviously, it's because it's name recognition and it's popularity. So people are already going to be on board and pulling for him and believing in him because of his name. And you're right. Jeff Saturday went through all the trenches and all the individual plays with Peyton Manning every step of the way. He's every bit of the guy that could know the knowledge that Peyton Manning knows and be the offensive guy that Peyton Manning is. It's just he never got the credit and the accolades for it. So, look, I'm pulling for him. I would love to see an all-ESPN coaching staff. You were talking about during the break. I would love to see for a team that's easy to pull for, if you make Orlovsky your quarterback coach, Ryan Clark can be your defensive backs coach, Big Swagoo can be your defensive line coach, Rex Ryan, you can make your defensive coordinator, and then you're going to have everybody in America watching the Colts every single week and really pulling for them.
713-780-ESPN. Let's get one more on this. 713-780-3776. Todd, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Todd.
Hey, real quick. Like several of the callers said, offensive line is what really matters. And basically, I think that he has a chance to succeed and surprise some people, because the quickest way for you to make a change is hopefully Taylor gets healthy. But then I think he's the Peyton Manning of offensive line. You know, he was a center. He knows gap schemes and tricks to help your offensive line. And basically, I think that'll give them more of a run game. What kind of offense was going to give Ehlinger the best chance to succeed at this point in time? It's not throwing it deep. Is like a read option. He can move a little bit. He's not great, but he can move. Put him in a read option, a run scheme offense with Saturday coaching up that offensive line. I mean, if Hakeem Olajuwon shows you how to do a dream shake, you listen. And I think maybe some of the team that might have been ready to check out might buy in because they watched this guy play as they were growing up.
Appreciate the call, Todd. I think you have it all figured out. The Jeff Saturday, look, I want this to work. I really do. I think it's something that could work in the NFL. Josh McCown, the Texans didn't have to do the experiment, probably because of the Brian Flores situation. I think they probably would have already been doing this experiment. I want to see how it plays out in the NFL. I want to see how a head coach does with zero coaching experience. So I'm rooting for Jeff Saturday. I'll be pulling for the Colts the rest of the way. The fear I have is the Colts just aren't built to win right now, and I don't think that this is going to work this season. Maybe he shows enough to where he can be the permanent head coach for the Colts. That would be fascinating to see. I hope it works for Saturday. That's all I'm going to say.
Look, I'm pulling for him again. I like him. I think he's a good dude. I think he's funny. I think he's got the right personality. I believe in his resume as a player. There's no reason not to believe that he was a leader when he was in that locker room working with Peyton Manning, and the fact that they, you know, were as tight as they were and they were both orchestrating that offense. Huge feather in his cap. I'm curious to see how it works out, because I really do think that other teams are watching, and that if they have success or he has any kind of success, that there are other teams that are going to look at this as an opportunity. And one, don't kid yourself, they're going to save money too. They're going to look at it and say, if this worked for them, we can do this. First-time coaches don't make nearly the salaries that big-time coaches do, and we can take our chance too. We'll find it that it'll be accepted and rooted for by our fan base, and we'll find out how it works out for our team. I don't think you're going to see this as a blueprint for, you know, teams that are already at a playoff level, but I think as teams struggle and do this rebuilding and do these kind of things, you know, the Josh McCown / Jeff Saturday experiment now is going to play out in front of us, and we're going to see how, you know, everybody reacts to it.
713-780-ESPN. Justin Verlander says this is a dynasty. The Astros are officially a dynasty. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been telling you about him. You guys look in the mirror every day. You get up, you get ready for work or get out to go out, start your day, and you look in the mirror and you go, damn, I once had a full head of hair. Now what? And you think about shaving it. You think about all these different gimmicks you've seen on TV. But you don't really think about the NeoGraft procedure, which is what Doc Linville does right here in Houston. And that could be all that you need, because the NeoGraft procedure is going to take your own hair. It's your own hair. It's not any gimmicks or things that mask it and cover it up. And it's basically moving some of it to where you need it most, where you're thinning or balding, and giving yourself an overall better appearance, more self-confidence, and the ability to actually feel good about your hair again. It's amazing. And basically, because you're an ESPN listener, you get a special deal that costs you nothing to actually look into it even further and see if it's right for you. Because if you go to 975hair.com right now, you're going to get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff, and you're going to find out if the procedure's right for you. You can check it out and see how long the procedure lasts and how long the recovery is, and when you finally see the full results and the success rate, which is the one that won me over. 95%+ of all the follicles moved, stay, and grow, and will be with you for the rest of your life. That's why I did it and turned my 8-head back into a 4-head. That's why you should look into doing it too. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. He's the best in the business. It's Doc Linville at 975hair.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's give away a couple of tickets. The American singer-songwriter Thomas Rhett, he is great, is coming to Houston for his 2023 home team tour. Join Thomas Rhett with special guests Cole Swindell and Nate Smith at the Toyota Center on August 4th, 2023. Caller number 4 right now to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets before you can buy them to see the show. Tickets go on sale this Friday, November 11th at LiveNation.com. So caller number 4 to 713-780-3776. We know that the Houston Astros are World Series champions. Two World Series titles now for the Houston Astros in this golden era of Houston Astro baseball. Four World Series appearances, and what is a six-year span? 17 through 22. If you want to throw 2015 in there, you're welcome to throw 2015 in there. But I think that the span is from 17 through 22. Two World Series titles, four World Series appearances, six straight ALCSs in 6 years, and doing a little bit of diving, deep diving on this as well. The last team with multiple titles and a winning percentage of over 622 or better over any six-year span, you have to go all the way back to the Yankees in the 50s, which had Mantle, Yogi, Whitey Ford. So the Astros are in rare air in Major League Baseball, and I'm looking at this golden era, and I know that that word dynasty is always a relative term. In my opinion, there is no argument that the Astros are a dynasty in this golden era.
Well, Jake Asmund will tell you that they need to win three, and that's what really validates them. Yeah, and that's coming from a true Yankee fan and New Yorker. I think that I said all along that I was, and Lamont was one of the ones giving me, you know, grief over and over again for saying it, but I believe that more so than any other team at any other time, and the fact that they were doing what they were doing and had done what they had done for 6 years, this was what they needed to do to validate the whole run, everything. And no, you're not going to ever get everyone to forget about 17. It's there. It's an indelible mark that's never going away. But you're going to get a whole lot, bunch of the realistic baseball experts and media types to really, really back off and slow down on focusing and concentrating on 17 and them not having won another one since and pointing the finger of the non-cheating as the reason why. But more so than anything else, it validates this golden era of Astros baseball. I mean, we can sit there and talk about it in terms of how many American League Championship Series consecutively, how many World Series appearances. But until you got that second one, you were still the Braves. You were a team that could make those runs and do those things, but you could only get over the hump once. And in your case, it was once with a little extra, and that wasn't good. Now that you got a second one, now it puts you above that rank, that realm. Now it takes you into the, not the, just the levels of respect, the levels of talking about a dynasty that had just truly great talent and maximized it for the extended period of time that we really haven't seen before, with very few exceptions.
He says if the Astros need to win three, then Asmund will say they need four because of 2017, which I find funny. 713-780-ESPN. Do you believe the Astros' golden era is a dynasty? 713-780-3776. You bring up the validation term, which I think you can go both ways. I think, like, you can make the argument for. I think you can make the argument against. Like, validation for a dynasty? Absolutely. I think that exists. Winning a second one. Because last year I said the Astros were a dynasty when, you know, they won the ALCS and then lost in the World Series. And, you know, I was probably a minority opinion there. I still believe it. Josh Reddick believed that the Astros were a dynasty before this second title. Justin Verlander believed the Astros were a dynasty before the second title. He was asked about it, like in the ALDS, and he was asked, "Do you think this is a dynasty?" And he said, "How can you not?" So it is a relative term. Like, dynasty is different for everybody else. I view it as a period of sustained success. Mm-hmm. I believe the Astros had sustained success before even winning the World Series in 2022. But it becomes a more popular opinion. Validating it, I think, is a good word for it. Now, in terms of like how the national fan base of Major League Baseball is going to view the Houston Astros long term, I don't think the second World Series title validates anything to them.
I think to an extent it does. I think when you see the Jason Starks and even the Passons and the biggest critics of the Astros during this entire run suddenly writing columns and making and sending out tweets and making statements that said, hey, look, 17 was encapsulated in a one season thing. And the fact that they've been able to do this with a multitude of different player changes and the leaders changing and the core changing and the fact that there were only five guys left and they did it yet again and this time they won it all is something that validates the organization. It validates the run. It makes people open their eyes and see the bigger picture of this was an organization tainted and marred and marked in all this negativity. But you know what? They were able to do what most organizations never figure out how to do, and that is a formula to sustain success, to continue winning at a very, very high level, chalking up lots of different conquers along the way with trophies and other things that show you that these were benchmarks. And then they got that second World Series title on top of it, which is the toughest pinnacle to attain. And you go, okay, now you're starting, now you get the people to realize this isn't about 17 and still being bitter and still wanting to point fingers and still being pissed off. This is about, hey, organizationally, from the uppers of management to the scouting staff to the players themselves, this is unbelievable what this organization was able to do, and you should give them their props.
Absolutely. But do you think the Passons and the Rosenthals and the Buster Olneys needed a second World Series championship to think that the Astros were good? I don't think so. I think they already knew the Astros were good.
I think it set the platform for them to have to kind of step back off of that soapbox where they were constantly beating. Every time they lost, you saw another reason why they were going to kind of go to it one more time, sarcastically needle them one more time.
They're still needling, even after they're giving them their flowers. I think that platform word's a good one, because I don't, like, they already thought the Astros were great. Like, now that they won another World Series, they still think that the Astros are great. I don't think that it changes their opinion that the Astros have reached this level of greatness, but the platform has changed to where now it's like, okay, now we got to finally admit it. It's more of like, I'm going to concede the point finally after all these years, more than it changed their opinion of how the Astros
they
were.
They knew that they were really a good team and a good organization, but they didn't promote it because they liked the fact that they had the ammo to continue to go to of they haven't won another one. And, you know, and we're still talking about the fact that they are cheaters. They were cheaters. They're still cheaters. And now, because of the platform set up, and when they win the championship, they now don't have that as much. And they have to give them the credit of, hey, as an organization, hey, as, you know, a talent evaluation standpoint, as the achievements keep rolling in, and now with this is the latest and greatest, you have to be able to talk to them about just being a damn good organization and baseball team.
Yeah, it's more about talking about it more than changing opinions. But from like a fan base perspective, I don't think that's ever going away.
No, I totally don't think there's always going to be the nutsos and crazies and the, you know, the diabolicals that support a different team that are never going to forget it, never going to forgive it, and never going to ever give them the credit for doing what they've done.
No, I don't think so either. But when you look at all of it, the Asman point's interesting about the three World Series titles, because I went back and I looked at like the, you know, what other organizations in baseball in recent memory, let's just say the turn of the millennium, have won two titles in a 6-year span.
Well, you and we talked about the Giants, but the biggest problem with the Giants is, because I thought that they were close to a dynasty, but the biggest problem with the Giants was in the years they weren't winning, was it every other year for like 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest problem I have, is the 2 years that they didn't win the World Series, they didn't make the playoffs.
That's like the point. Like the Giants, they won three World Series titles.
I didn't take that from you. I'm just saying you and I were talking about it in the dugout.
The Giants won three World Series titles, but they didn't have that sustained greatness because The 2 years, like you said, they didn't go to the postseason. So like do you look at the Giants as a dynasty? They have three titles in 5 years, but they had two gaps in between where they weren't a postseason team. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Astros have one less championship, but they've sustained the greatness. They might not have won the World Series in all of those years, but they won two of them. They've been to four, and they've been to six straight ALCSs. I look at this Astros six-year run as more of a dynasty than that Giants' five-year run where they won three World Series title because of the sustained greatness. The Red Sox had a span where it was kind of similar to the Giants, and I think you have to go back to the Yankees of the early 2000s as like the last great dynasty in Major League Baseball.
They won three in a row?
Yeah, I wouldn't put the Astros over them just yet because, look, the 2-6 versus what the Yankees did, I think the Yankees won three in a row, and then they had really good years around them as well. I wouldn't put the Astros above that, but I also don't think the Astros are done. We talked about this yesterday. All of this young nucleus and still some of the older guys that are still very good as well. I mean, maybe the Astros at some point do rival those Yankees of the early 2000s.
Because you're right. I mean, look, all you can ask for is a chance, right? Because it's a crapshoot once you get to the playoffs. We always talk about the hot team in a short series. Look at the Dodgers. Look at the teams. Look, they still had sustained success. They still had a 100-win season. They had the best record in baseball, but they didn't win at all. So as long as you're an Astros team that knows that you have sustained a roster that is capable of winning your division again, getting to the playoffs again, and giving your team a good chance to win it all again, in one of those years, you might do it again. It might not be next year, but the other point that I heard BK made when I was driving home yesterday, which is a valid one too, the more difficult thing sometimes with these teams is when you make it 1 year and lose, how difficult it is to return the next year and then win, and how rare it is, and they just did that too. So they're chalking up all these different accomplishments that no matter what your definition of dynasty is, if you don't believe they already are, they are like the door. They're not knocking on the door. The door is open, and a lot of people believe, like you and I, they've stepped through, but nothing says that they don't have the opportunity to do it one more time, and then what are you going to say?
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Cash it or trash it? What are the biggest bold reactions, takes over the weekend? Are we willing to cash it? We're going to trash it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.